Backstage with Robert Emery.
Hello and welcome to episode 5 of Backstage with me, Robert Emery. Thanks so much for joining us today. As usual, this episode is supported by Lat56. They're a luggage company who I've used for many years, and they do fantastic products at very reasonable prices. These things are stylish, they're sturdy, and I can't recommend them enough. So head over to lat56.com to find out more information about them. So this is the every other episode, and on the every other episode, it's usually a conversation with myself, if you can have such a thing, or it's a chat with somebody else about an aspect of working in the music industry. So it's not one of the interviews. So last week we had Sarah Miles on. Next week we've got a very special guest coming up, and you'll find out more about that shortly. But this week, it's all about what does a musical director actually do? Rehearsal process. So we start a show, and I'm referring to, in particular, a brand new show here. So you probably know that I've been working for the past couple of years on Bad Out of Hell. That was a brand new show. So we start in the rehearsal room. So it's about developing. You know, you can write your script, you can write your music away from actors, and you've probably had workshops before that. The biggest challenge is trying to develop the piece with the actors in the room and make it happen, and make it happen fast, that you can get the show onto the stage. So one of the biggest things that the musical director does, of course, is teach the music. So with the soloists, with the principals, you tend to do one-on-one sessions. But of course, you also have an ensemble. Ensemble teaching is tricky because you can have up to 6-8 parts going on at the same time in ensemble singing. So that does take its time. So you rehearse the scenes, and I'm not going to talk about that because that's the job of the director and the associate director or the resident director, depending upon how it's set up, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. But nevertheless, you rehearse the scenes, you rehearse the music, you start building it together, a bit like a jigsaw puzzle, and at some point you start doing stagger through runs of the piece to make sure that the whole thing works. Now, the tricky thing about being in the music department is that I have primarily two sets of people to look after. One, of course, is the cast, but obviously the other is the musicians.
Musicians.
Musicians rehearse, obviously, in a very different way from the cast. You know, the cast, musical theatre actors and actresses typically don't read music, so it's a case of learning by ear. Although, of course, there's always an exception to the rule, but typically that's the case. But the musicians, of course, always, or nearly always, read music. And so, theoretically, your first playthrough of a piece of music should be, I would say, 60% where you want it to end up being. Obviously, you've got to talk about style, how you're going to play things, find out any wrong notes in the score, all of that sort of stuff. But nevertheless, you meet the guys or the girls, or both, hopefully. You put the music on their stand, and away you go. They should be talented enough that you can just start playing. So you do band calls, and typically we have 4 or 5 days, if we're lucky, of band calls. And then there is, in my humble opinion, the most exciting thing to happen in musical theatre, and it's something called a Zitzprobe. So the Zitzprobe is the very first time the band meets the cast, and the cast meet the band. And we get together, mostly in a rehearsal room, and up until that point, the cast have only ever heard the music just with a solo piano. And so hopefully for them, it's the most incredible experience where all this music comes alive and they stand and sing with the band. And of course, it's the same for the musicians. You know, the musicians have only ever heard the music with just the music. They've never heard the singing parts to it. So it's that opportunity where the two worlds of musical theatre collide together. Hopefully the stars align, and really exciting things happen. And I can promise you, the energy that you get from a Zitz is like no other day in the musical theatre process. It is so excited. It's by far my favourite day.
Technical rehearsals.
So technical rehearsals in the theatre, you know, they can last anywhere from a couple of days to 2, 3, 4 weeks. And you now need to hand over to all of the other departments, sound, lighting, automation, costumes, wigs, the list goes on, stage management. You need to hand over to them so they can do their bit in getting the show up and running. And the thing that they don't like is for you to be constantly stopping a rehearsal process saying, do you know what, you didn't sing that right, can we just look at that again? Because in their minds, and they're right, in their minds, you know, you've probably had the past month or so to fix that. They only have a couple of weeks. So technical rehearsals can be tedious, they can be very boring, and they're very, very slow. You might cover 3 or 4 minutes over the space of 3 or 4 hours, if you're lucky. But, you know, it needs to be done. Lots of waiting around. And really, from a music department point of view, you are probably one of the least important people at that moment in time. Of course, part of a technical rehearsal is getting the sound right and dealing with the sound department and the sound designer, and making sure that it sounds exactly how you want it to sound. And the sound for me is the biggest thing in the musical theatre world, that you can go into the show, see the most incredible actors on stage, hear the most incredible band, listen to the most incredible composition, and look at brilliant direction and brilliant set and lighting. And if the sound designer has done a bad job, well, that's it. You know, for me, I sit there and I don't enjoy it, the piece. So the sound designer is so crucial, and it is severely underestimated in the general public of how important their job is to put you into that world that us creators are trying to create. From that stage, we then go into
previews.
Well, previews are essentially performances where an audience gets a discount for coming to see the preview, because they know that it's probably not a finished piece yet. It's still in development. Things still change. In previews for Bad Out of Hell, we put songs in, we took them out. We try all sorts of different things, and we are watching and listening to the audience's reaction and trying to adjust what we do to make the audience enjoy the piece more. Previews, again, can be a really stressy time, to be honest with you, because you tend to do rehearsals during the day, show during the night, next day rehearsals, evening show, and it's pretty relentless. You know, I've done many shows over the years, and I remember quite vividly during a preview, so during a performance with, you know, 2,000 people in the audience, I had the assistant director run up to me whilst I was conducting and said, Robert, you do know the next piece, we cancelled it for tonight. And I looked at her and I thought, you've got to be joking me. This, you can't pull a piece of music in the middle of a show. And she said, yeah. Everybody was told, but we forgot to tell you. It's quite an important part for the conductor to know if he's conducting a piece of music or not. I've also had a preview period where I've not been conducting. I've been a supervisor of a show. And I've been backstage and had the lead character burst out in tears on me, saying, I don't think I can go on, I don't think I can do this, I don't feel strong, I don't feel secure. And I literally spent the entire show with them backstage. Every time they came off the set, I would be there jollying them up, persuading them that they're doing a great job, being there as a, try to be there as a rock for them, to support them, and throw them back onto the next scene, and then come off the next scene, and just be encouraging for them. You know, she got through the preview, and of course she was a superstar. She did really, really well. And it's just an insecurity. And that's the thing. You know, we all in this business are paid to create art of some form. And art is subjective. So what is amazing for me and to me might be terrible for you or to you. Because of that reason, you have to have a sense of self-belief that what you're doing is right, is the best of your ability, and you have to believe that what you're doing has artistic integrity. If you don't believe that, then you're in real trouble, because you're trying to persuade an audience of something, and if you don't believe it yourself, that's really difficult to handle.
Conductor.
So what does a conductor actually do? So one of the things you actually have to do is bring people in. You have to sometimes point to them and show them and gesture with your conducting that is their time to start singing. Likewise with musicians, new musicians who don't necessarily know their part as well as you would like, or because it's a new piece of music, and therefore, you know, you have to be the person who is the safety blanket for them all and who helps them enter when they need to enter. You're constantly making minute changes to improve the music department, and so when you're working with a new cast or a new show, every single day at the end of a run or at the end of a performance, you're going to meet with certain people and say, I loved the way you did this, but next time could we try doing this? And it's a constant evolution to improve the product that you've got in the first place.
Stamina
is by far the biggest issue with a cast. You know, you're doing 8 shows a week. That's really, really tough. Imagine going to the gym, doing a 2-hour workout, and then having to rest for a couple of hours and then do another 2-hour workout. That's essentially what these actors do on a Wednesday and a Saturday, usually, when they have a double show day. So we've talked about getting a cast on stage, up and running, and the rehearsal process. But what about put-ins? What is a put-in? A put-in is what we need to do to get all the understudies working. Most main roles, if not all main roles, have at least one understudy. And there's an ever-ending battle. And the battle is this. We all like to put our own stamp, our own mark on a piece of work that we're doing. So whether it be me as a conductor, or Joe as the piano player, or Sally as the actress doing the lead role, we all like to put our own stamp on it and say, this is me, this is my take on doing this. That's great, but the trick with the understudy, of course, is that they are in place of the person who has that role on a day-to-day basis. And the person, typically they play opposite, so if it's a leading lady and she's playing a lot of scenes with the leading man, that leading man needs to know that the leading lady will do the same thing every night. Now, if you're an understudy and you go in there and you do things radically different, I mean, that's going to really throw off everyone. And it's unacceptable to do that. So at the same time, do you want to be a carbon copy of the person that you are taking over? Well, there are some advantages for that. Of course, it brings stability for everyone, but it's not terribly interesting, probably, for you as an artist. So there is a fine line, and that's a real battle. I'm always having people come up to me saying, can I sing it differently? Can I do this? Can I do that? And 95% of the time I turn around and go, I'm sorry, no. I know that sounds like I'm Mr. Meanie, but you need to have the stability for the rest of the cast, the rest of the crew, the rest of the musicians, that we do hear the same thing every night. Of course, you like to mix it up and keep it energetic, and there might be subtle things that you do differently, but the fundamental performance needs to stay the same.
Maintenance.
So once the show is up and running, all of the creative departments have left, and it's just a day-to-day running of the show. What are the challenges there? Well, energy, keeping everybody energized, entertained, that's a big job of a musical director. If I stand there and wave my arms around like I truly do not care, or I would much prefer to be at home watching EastEnders, then of course, you know, it's gonna give off no energy. The musicians are going to play like they're in their living room. The actors, that, you know, they're not going to give all that they need to. So I do believe that one of the biggest part, if not the biggest part of a conductor, is giving everybody around you the energy. So every other week or so, I'll go and sit and do a show watch as a member of the audience, take a notepad and a pen with me, try and write in the dark, and give everybody notes to keep the show in tip-top form. every month or so you need to do tidy up and cleaning rehearsals. This is again just to keep the show maintained in the form that the producers expect.
The headmaster.
Sometimes I feel like being a musical director is a little bit like being a headmaster, especially when you're dealing with a relatively young cast who like to push the boundaries a little bit, shall we say. Actors, actresses, musicians, they all do cheeky things at some time just to keep themselves entertained, keep others entertained. And as long as the audience do not realise what is happening, I'm okay with that. I can give you an example. There was a trick that was pulled upon one of the keyboard players in Bad Out of Hell, which is quite a fun little gag. He had a monitoring system, and on his monitoring system was all the instruments. So drums, guitars, bass guitar, trumpet, trombone, other keyboards. And the person who shall be nameless went and swapped their instrument, which was keyboard one, for the trombone. So when he couldn't hear himself loud enough, he would turn up keyboard one, but he didn't understand why it wouldn't work. All it did is turn up the trombone, and it was very funny to watch his face. But you know, he's the professional, and therefore he just laughed it off and dealt with it, and it was, you know, entertaining for the rest of the band. I smiled, and it didn't affect the performance in any way, shape or form. So for me, that's a good little gag to play. One of the other issues about being a bit of a headmaster is pulling up people who slack a bit. And it's inevitable, isn't it? You do 8 performances a week, you're tied to a 12-month contract. Actors sometimes don't sing, and that's a tricky thing to deal with, because you have to, as an MD, go up to them and say, I'm really sorry, I know that you're probably not feeling it today, but you need to do your job. You need to sing. It's unacceptable to not sing. I've even had it in the middle of a show, believe it or not, where an actor has come up to me whilst I've been conducting a show and actually say to me, I can't do the rest of the performance. You need to pull me off. I can't sing anymore. My voice is killing me. Please, can we do a show stop? Pull me off and get another actor on stage. And I've had to do that. And it's tricky to deal with. That's the crux of being a musical director. Your day-to-day basis of conducting the show is relatively easy. You should be sufficiently experienced and talented that you can deal with that side very easily. Where your experience really, really shows is where things like that happen, where you have a lead actor come to you in the middle of a performance and whisper in your ear, I cannot go on. Can you please take me off? You have to deal with that. You have to handle it, because it is your call as a musical director to stop the show if you believe you need to get the understudy on stage and deal with the chain reaction that creates. It's your call, and it's a big responsibility. And so it's issues like that really do show up a good MD from a bad.
Resident team.
So the resident director is the person whose responsibility it is to make sure that the vision of the director is maintained throughout the run of a show. And the resident will usually come in once or twice a week, sometimes more. They need to keep on top of that. The choreographer or the resident choreographer does exactly the same with the choreography.
Producers.
Producers are the big boss. They've, to be blunt, are usually the money behind the show, and therefore they're used to getting their own way. So producers can be tricky to deal with. I mean, I remember once on a show a few years ago, I had a producer come to me saying they wanted, and this was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, before a 7:30 show, saying they wanted to change the music for the bows. They didn't like the music. I said, yeah, that's absolutely fine. We can do that, but not for tonight. And he didn't understand. He just said, yeah, of course we can do it for tonight. You know, you guys are professionals. Just, you know, cut a few bars out here. It goes on for too long. And I said to him, I'm sorry, we can't, not for tonight. It's not a case of just cutting out a few bars. the stage management department need to know, the cast need to know, lighting needs to know, sound needs to know, automation, all the other departments need to know what is happening, why it's happening, and how it affects everybody, and see if there's any chain reaction. It's a big thing to do, and it's something which we're not prepared to do tonight. Now, of course, he didn't like that. You know, he's the money man. He's the big boss. He's used to people saying yes, yes, yes. And on that day, I was saying no, no, no. And, you know, he didn't like that. Did it make me a popular man with him? No, it absolutely didn't. But there we go. That's my job as an MD, is to advise on what I think is possible and what's not.
True.
Sometimes you have to liaise with the stage manager or the company manager or what's called the DSM, the caller. So these things all are have different responsibilities. So the stage manager, it's his or her responsibility to look after what is going on the stage. They are the boss of the stage, if you like. It is, the book stops with them. It's their responsibility to keep everybody safe, to make sure all of the departments are working well, and they have a huge responsibility on their head. The company manager, it's their responsibility to look after the company. And by the word company in musical theatre, we mean all of the cast, the musicians, all of the staff who work on the show. They have a lot of pastoral care to deal with. You know, they have a very tricky job to keep everybody happy. The DSM, the deputy stage manager, who is also called the caller. Now, they've got a very, very important job. One of the things they do is, during the show, is call the show. They'll have a book which may have 100 or 1,000 cues in, and it could be a cue for a lighting change, a cue for a sound effect, it could be a cue for a piece of set going on. Everybody will be on communication headsets, on comms, and they will be the person who is running the show, controlling it, making sure the curtain goes up on time, making sure that chair comes on stage when it should do, dealing with any show stops that may happen because of an emergency. They are really the person, aside from the musical director, that runs the show, and they have an incredibly stressful and important job.
Musicians.
So sometimes you've got musicians, of course, in the pit, but sometimes they are under the stage or in another building entirely during a show. There are advantages and disadvantages to both. I love being in the pit. I love being at the center of the stage, where I can really see everything with my eyes, communicate with my eyes. I mean, eye contact with actors from an MD is unbelievably important and is a real luxury to have, actually, sometimes. But there are advantages as well to being hidden, and of course one of them is fun. You can have a little bit more fun because you are in a soundproof environment, so when the music is not playing, you can chat, you can play games, you can generally be a little bit more misbehaved than you can do if you are visible by an audience in a pit.
Deputy musicians.
One of the hard things of being an MD is dealing with depths. So that's musicians tend to have their chair, and it is their chair, and they do 75% of the performances or so, which leaves 25% of performances where they provide and put in place somebody to perform on their behalf. So this is really the big difference, or one of the big differences, between people on the stage and people under the stage. I think probably the musicians are the only people in the theatre where they can provide people to do their jobs if they don't want to turn up, if they have another gig, if they have a family commitment, if they've got a holiday. They don't need to seek, well, technically they should seek permission, but they don't always need to seek permission to put in a dep. It's really nice to have fresh new faces in the pit. It keeps things alive, and sometimes you hear new things that a dep is playing that you like, and you try and insert that into the chair holders playing as well. Of course, the huge disadvantage is that Adep typically doesn't know the show anywhere near as well as the chair holder, and therefore is more likely to make mistakes. And it's the same question that happens with the understudies on stage. It is their job to be as stable and as similar as possible to the chair holder or to the principal actor, but nevertheless bringing a little bit of their own artistic integrity into the mix. So that's the tricky thing. We once had a player on a show. I'm not going to name the player or the show, but he was so not right. We didn't realize until it was too late, until the curtain went up. It was quite a hard play, quite a sort of loud, rocky play. And this guy was just not cutting it. Unfortunately, he was improvising like some sort of dodgy jazz musician. He was playing stuff in the wrong octaves. He was very, very nervous, and it sounded pretty horrendous. To be honest with you, once you're in the show, there's very little you can do. It's very rare that happens, and most of the time Deps come in, they are very well prepared, and they have spent a lot of time learning the show, and they've been into the show to do sit-ins to really understand the show. So most of the time, it's fine. But from a tricky point of view from an MD, you can get the odd dodgy dep. I've even had a dep who didn't turn up until Act 2 because he wasn't aware he was booked. And it was a flute player, so I ended up having to try and play a flute on a keyboard to at least cover the parts that was missing. So it's quite amazing what you need to do as an MD to try and make the show go on. On Bad Out of Hell, I was really lucky. I had two assistant MDs and an associate MD. So the assistant MDs, best in the business, Steve Corley and Ben Holder, they were there on a nightly basis playing their pads on the other keyboards, and then they moved up to conduct the show once or twice a week. The associate MD was equally as amazing, and it's his responsibility, so he's not in the band, but he can be called in as and when we need it. The sound department. So one of the departments an MD has to work with very closely is the sound department. I do regular show watches, as I've mentioned already. One of the things I'm looking for is that the sound stays the same that was set on the opening night. That's quite a difficult thing to achieve, not because they're bad at their job, but because there's variables. Different actors, different actresses sing at different levels. Different musicians play at different levels and at different styles. And you might have a trombone player who is the loudest trombone player you've ever heard in your life, in which case you have one setting for them. And then another trombone player can come in, and they may be really quite quiet and timid compared to the other chair holder. So you have to have another setting for that person. The list is endless, and consistency is the key, and consistency is the thing that is most difficult to pull off here. Of course, the sound department need to be your friend, because ultimately they translate what you are playing and performing and singing into the sound that an audience can hear. Sometimes things go wrong, and I remember doing Bad Out of Hell in Toronto, where I was based underneath the stage, and the only way I could actually hear any of the show or hear any of the music was by wearing headphones. I was in a sort of a soundproof room, so you took the headphones off in the middle of the show, it would be pretty much silent. And I remember vividly, towards the end of Act 1, I was conducting Bad Out of Hell, and the noise in my headphones just went off. It was one of the scariest moments of my life in musical theatre. I looked around, nobody else seemed panicked. The musicians were carrying on playing. The people on the stage, I could see them on a television monitor. They seemed absolutely fine. So it was really clear very quickly that it was my own headphones, my own monitoring that went down, and nobody else was affected. What can you do in that situation? Well, there's very little you can do, but carry on. So I carried on conducting and playing the keyboard with absolutely zero sound, just hoping that I knew the score well enough and knew the tempi well enough that I would stay in the beat until the end of the act. Thankfully, no disaster happened. But it does show you how, again, having experience and handling things go wrong is probably the most important part of a musical director's job.
Technical aspects.
There are many different things about being an MD that you as Joe Public won't realise. One of them is that we have a phone. You see sometimes a musical director or a conductor picking up a phone, and it's a good old traditional phone with a curly wire. Why do we have that? Well, that is our link to, usually, to the DSM, to the Deputy Stage Manager. You speak to the DSM at the start of the show to say that all your musicians are there sitting and waiting with anticipation to begin with the show and that you don't have any issues. Sometimes if you do have an issue, it's the DSM you call and say, could I please have the sound department to the pit to fix a microphone broken or whatever it may be. Likewise, sometimes there is a big red light, and that is the emergency stop light. If that goes off, I know there's a problem. And I'm in the middle of a show, that'll go off. The first thing I do is pick up the phone whilst I'm conducting, whilst I'm playing, and speak to the DSM, and the DSM will give me instructions. We're going to stop at the end of the number. We need to stop immediately. We're going to carry on, but please note there has been a cast change. Whatever the situation has occurred, the DSM will communicate that to me. So that's what we're doing when we are on the phone at the start of a show. We're speaking to the other departments just to make sure that everything is fine.
Keyboards.
You'll notice that on virtually all of the keyboards now, there is a laptop or a computer screen next to the keyboard. What's that for? Well, in the good old days, keyboards used to have internal sounds on them, and those were the sounds that we used to use. So if you wanted the sound of a harpsichord or a honky-tonk piano, a flute, violin, whatever it may be, those sounds used to be built into the keyboards. Nowadays, we don't tend to use the sounds from inside the keyboard. We use the sounds on a computer, and the reason for that is because those sounds can be custom made and it's a lot easier to use. So that's what the laptop or the monitor does next to the keyboards.
Monitoring systems.
We all have monitors, mostly now in pits, and you put your earphones on and that's how you listen to the rest of the band, that's how you listen to the music. And you get to choose your own mix. So you can say, I want more drums, I want more bass, I want less singers, I want more keyboards, and then you can mix your own little sound world. You can save it as your own preset. And so every night you come in to play the show, you recall that preset, hopefully you've got the same sound in your earphones, and it's where you feel most comfortable and what you need. So a bass guitar will have a lot of drums in his ears, because the bass and the drums need to be working together in one unit. Likewise, the drummer will have a lot of the bass guitar in his ears. However, a trumpeter probably doesn't want a huge amount of bass guitar and drums in their ears. They want probably more of the trombone, because the trumpet and the trombone quite often play together. So each individual player on each individual instrument can choose what they want to listen to, how loud it is, save it, and that's the monitoring system.
Podium.
At the Dominion Theatre, there was always an explosion at the end of Act 1 with a load of confetti. I think, well, what's that got to do with the musical director? It's got everything to do with the musical director when all of the confetti lands on him and the keyboard whilst he's trying to conduct. It's a problem. So sometimes you have to custom build your little podium, and the solution on this particular occasion was to have four fans which were switched on just 10 seconds before. So when the pyrotechnic went off, the confetti went in the air, it started to land towards me and covered me every night. Well, it no longer did, because the fans just blew the confetti away over to the audience. I also, at the Dominion Theatre, for the first time ever, conducted from an iPad. So we put the sheet music onto the iPad and did that to make life a little bit easier for me. It's quite a difficult conduct, it's quite a busy conduct. And so the facility and the thing that makes having the sheet music on an iPad great is the fact that you've got a pedal to do your page turn, or you just tap the screen and it turns. So it's just a lot easier if you're trying to play with both hands and occasionally conduct with one hand or nod with your head, and you've got other things to deal with, that you can just hit a pedal and the page turn happens automatically.
Click.
Finally, within the sort of technical aspects, we've got something called a click. click is something that occasionally, not always, but occasionally we use in musical theatre. And it's a metronome going off in my ear as a conductor. I conduct to the metronome. And the reason for that is because there can be stuff pre-programmed to happen at certain points in the music. So if there's a piece which is 4 minutes long, maybe on the last second of the piece there is an explosion that happens with a lighting effect, pyrotechnics going off, and a sound effect of a bomb happening. As an example, well, to try and manually do that every night and get it all synced and lined up is harder than just programming it. So there is a click that runs. I conduct the click. So when it gets to that last second of the piece, all of these effects happen automatically. Sometimes the actors have got incredibly difficult dances to do on stage and they need some support. For instance, if there's a big dance number, then what you may do is record some backing vocals onto the click just to give a bit of support for the actors who are panting away, trying desperately to do the dancing and singing. So it's not there so actors can mime. It's not there to replace actors singing. It's there to give them a bit of support when they need to for reasons like complicated dance numbers. It's been used for many years. It's a bit of a secret in the business and most people really don't like to talk about it. I actually don't see the harm in just being truthful. It's part of theatre now. So that is a clickety click.
Strange stories.
Being a musical director is a really interesting and fulfilling job. Strange things can happen, I guess, like in any industry. I guess sometimes it can be a little more hair-raising when you're the conductor of a show and you've got a couple of thousand people behind you and something goes wrong. Or sometimes you need to just sort of struggle through. So I remember in 2016, I was doing a show in Berlin. I was the production musical supervisor for it. I was also conducting it for a small amount of time. And the last show that I was doing at the end of a 3-month stint in Berlin, I had the most awful stomach cramps beforehand. And in honesty, if it had been any other show, I probably would have actually just gone straight to the doctors. Because it was really not great, had an assistant come in and conduct on my behalf. But it was my last show. I wanted to say bye-bye to everybody. I wanted to conduct the show one more time, and I was absolutely determined to do it. So I took some medication, went and conducted the show. Massive pain, and I mean, immediately after the show, I actually went straight to hospital and I had to have it dealt with. But it just shows that, you know, I wanted to do it. It was something that was important for me, and something like stomach cramps and being in pain was not going to stop me from conducting the show. Sometimes there's no business like show business, and the show must go on. I've had it once where I was here in the UK. I had a phone call to say, please get on a plane to Switzerland. You need to conduct the show tonight because their musical director has been arrested at customs when they've flown in for some parking fines that they hadn't paid. And it was actually my birthday, and so I hopped on a plane over to Switzerland, and you know, five hours later I was conducting a show that I hadn't actually looked at for a couple of years. But you know, what's the worst that can happen? I suppose it could go wrong, but you got to trust yourself in those situations.
Advice.
So there we go. So I've covered quite a bit of what does a musical director actually do. My last thing is advice for any budding musical directors out there. How do you go about it? What do you do? What do you do to start with? My honest advice to you is to find somebody who does it. Shadow them, latch onto them, call them, bug them, get some work experience, go and sit in on technical rehearsals, go and sit in on rehearsals in a rehearsal room, watch them conduct. Of course you need to know how to conduct. You need to know how to play the piano. You need to know the basic anatomy of singing and basic technique of singing. You need to know all of these things. But most importantly, you need to surround yourself with people who are really good at that job. And you need to absorb and act like a sponge from them. If you do that, that's what I did when I was younger. If you do that, then you might have a fighting chance of being a great MD. I hope you've enjoyed this. It's something, an interesting career and an interesting job. It's only one part of the aspect of my life in particular, but I love MDing, and it's something that I will continue to do for many years to come. Thank you very much for listening, and speak to you soon. Goodbye. Hello, it's me again. I hope you enjoyed that episode of Backstage with Robert Emery. If you did, I'd really appreciate you sharing it with your colleagues, with your friends, with your family. I'd also appreciate you subscribing. You can go on to Apple Podcasts and subscribe there, and it would be great if you could comment. Comments are really important for me to get traction on this, and to prove to people that actually it can be an enjoyable, interesting podcast to listen to. So if you like what you heard, please, please spend 2 minutes, go and subscribe and go and comment. Thank you.